What is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia for Social podcast. My name is Nostalgia, aka Taylor. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy?
Happy holidays. Hey,
happy holidays. Honestly, I think when this goes out, happy New Year's Eve? Question mark? Maybe. New Year's Day? I think.
New Year's Day is Wednesday.
Okay, so it'll be New Year's Eve when this comes out. Okay. But yeah, so happy holidays to everyone. As you can see, we are down a member again today. It's been back-to-back episodes where we haven't gotten a full cast together.
It's the holidays, but, man. It's hard.
Yeah, man. It is what it is. There's a lot of stuff going on. So Kayla's not going to be with us today. And that's unfortunate because I really, really, really wanted to talk about Sonic this week, but we're gonna wait out of fairness to her. We're gonna wait.
All three of us went on a journey this week and we saw all three Sonic movies.
Yes, much like how me and you went through the journey of watching Ava for like 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
Not as emotionally damaging, but nonetheless a journey.
Hey, we're gonna talk about it more next episode, but some parts of three got me. I'll be honest.
Yeah, we'll talk about it a lot more. Out of fairness to Kayla, we're not going to talk about Sonic. We're going to wait. Today, though, we did have an idea for like a secondary type of episode. And it kind of, the stars kind of aligned for this one just because we'd already had just seen it in the middle of watching Sonic. Today, we're going to be talking about the movie Akira. But before that...
Yeah, before we get into that.
So you said you told me before we started recording you had some kind of rant you wanted to go on.
I had like a personal, I've been going on this personal journey of gatekeeping. Oh my God. Here's the thing.
Oh my God.
I personally don't like gatekeeping. I think it's very pretentious and honestly, whatever you're gatekeeping isn't benefiting from you gatekeeping it. If you gatekeep a restaurant, that's money they're missing out on. If you're gatekeeping a series, that's less support that this series is gonna get.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that. But then there's just, as I've gotten older, I've become more cynical. And on Christmas Day, me and my friends at 10 p.m., so after all the family festivities were done and all that, me and the movie group, we went to go see Nosferatu.
Okay.
Which is fantastic, by the way. It's a great movie. I don't know what changed in me, but we're in an IMAX theater, IMAX at AMC, and it's packed. It's a packed theater. And half of me was like, damn, this is so fucking cool. So many people are out on Christmas Day to watch this movie, to watch, like, it's a Robert Eggers film. Like, this is like a movie. This is like art.
Yeah.
And then the Nicole Kidman AMC thing. You know how it plays before every AMC? Okay. It pops up and the theater starts clapping. And I'm sitting, and a few of my friends, I didn't say this, a few of my friends were like, yeah. And here's the thing, they're just having a good time. But as that's happening in my mind, I'm like, I'm so fucking annoyed right now. This is what happens when your interest, which movies, what the fuck? Oh, such a niche interest.
Right.
When your interest becomes mainstream. And then like, after I had that thought, I was like, why am I so annoyed?
Yeah, I get it.
And the same thing happened with, again, we probably won't talk about this next episode, but Ben Schwartz on the Colbert show, where Colbert is like, oh, I know a lot about Sonic. And Ben Schwartz is like, oh, yeah? And Colbert is like, yeah, Shadow falls in love with Maria. And this face of horror comes across Ben Schwartz where he goes, whoa, no.
Oh, God. And all the God.
All the comments under it were like, when your interest becomes mainstream. Which I guess it just comes with old age that I'm becoming more cynical, but I should just let off the gas.
I mean, there's a realm of let people enjoy things. Like, there's that sentiment, right? Like, let people enjoy things. You know, people are, for the movie aspect specifically, like, people are there to see Nosferatu. They see the AMC thing. It's like a cool little thing.
Yeah.
Like,
and I know during the movie, everyone was quiet. So, like, when it mattered, it was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know. Like, that small stuff, like, I probably, like, you, I mean, we've known each other long enough that it probably would annoy me too. Not from the same reason. Just because people just don't act like they have some sense in public places sometimes. It pisses me off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do get it. I do get it. But also, like, you know, there's a realm of, like, you know, let people enjoy those things. Don't be that upset about it. I will say, though, there are some areas that need to be gatekept because the people that are joining in on these interests tend to, like, pervert them into something else.
Sure.
And it's like, it's not like literally today. It's so funny you brought this up. Today, there's some dumbass K-pop stan account.
Oh my god.
You already know where I'm going.
So this stupid.
This is so bad because me and you share the exact same internet. This is actually really bad. We are both the same amount of chronically online. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So, our timelines are literally the exact same, which is so funny to me. So for the listeners, this one K-pop stan account tweeted a video of some K-pop account, some artist, and they're singing this like very 80s, like late 80s R&B type of song. Like, think about it as like a New Edition, Boys to Men type of vibe.
Sampling, I think it's Bobby Brown or something like that.
They're sampling somebody. They might be somebody. Sampling New Edition. So they're singing a song, and the tweet goes, show me one black person that's made a song equivalent to this. Something on that nature. And I'm like, are we serious? This, like, and so it's stuff like that where gatekeeping needs to stay because
you could also tell. I find these kind of tweets funny. It's like, you can tell they're not actually racist. You can tell they don't have the heart to be racist. They're just trying to rage bait. They don't mean it.
Yeah.
So that makes it extra annoying.
Yeah. They're not in it for the love of the game.
Exactly.
They're just trying to get engagement bait. And it's so funny because, like, literally I was looking through the quote tweets and people were obviously like, you know, saying you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But then somebody, like, they got community noted, which I think was really funny. They got community noted and it was like, this song or this artist is not copying, but like using the same styles like swing jack or like 80s R&B that a lot of black artists coined and started. And then somebody posted like a video to quote tweet it. It was like, this is literally what they're doing. And it's like it was new edition. If this is love, I think it was what the song was by New Edition. I love that song, but I'm saying that stuff for you and your gatekeeping stuff. Like, I kind of get it. Also got to let people enjoy things, but there are some realms where gatekeeping is needed and stuff like that, where it's like, don't try to make this into something it's not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's
This is also, before we get into Akira, this is also coming from such a hypocritical standpoint on my part, because there is a local theater here that shows a bunch of old, like, rescreenings of old movies or special events. And I love that theater, the Coral Gables Art Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to go see a screening of Grindhouse, which is 2007 Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez film. It's double feature. It's really fun. It's really B movie esque. And before that, because every Tarantino was a big collaborator with the Weinstein Company.
Mm.
So they show the Weinstein Company logo and the entire crowd boos.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was funny. But when the Nicole Kidman thing, there's 12-year-old me who wanted to be a hipster so bad, who wanted to be like, oh, I like this thing before it was cool.
Yeah.
He's like, get out of my skin. Like he's trying to get out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of like the, when you have a deep niche interest, you kind of want to protect it in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of applies to anime too, in some ways. Like having that niche, niche interest of this thing, of this genre of media. And then as it starts to get more popular and people that you would never think to watch it, start watching it and asking about it and stuff. And the 12-year-old in you is like, or 14, 15-year-old in you is like, no, like these people don't need to be in here. They weren't shooting with me in the gym. They weren't with me when it was happening. But like, again, just gotta let people enjoy things. When they start turning it into something it's not, then the gatekeeping can start to make sense. But
yeah.
Other than that, yeah. So
that was my little personal gatekeeping journey.
Yes. Very funny. So today we're going to talk about, I guess funny enough, like with it being like anime related and like more of like a niche genre, I guess at the time, we're going to talk about some 90s anime. And one of them is the iconic, even if you haven't seen it, you've probably seen it, Akira. And me and Zoe, and I think, I don't know if Kayla ever got the chance to watch it. I don't know if she'll probably...
Yeah, she saw it for the first time earlier this year.
Okay. Yeah. That reminds me, I need to update my letterbox and actually give Akira a review. Because I said, last episode, all three of us were on air, I said I would watch anime movies and give reviews on Letterbox. I did say that. I did say it on air, so now I gotta actually follow through.
It's kind of interesting. We'll probably talk about it later, but the idea of gatekeeping actually really it ties closely to Akira, because Akira was such a hit, was so big and was so well received that it kind of put anime on the map in the West before Dragon Ball, because it came out in the 80s.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was like a big, I don't know if they did like some kind of limited release in the United States for it or not. I'm not 100% sure. I could look it up if I need to, but I know it was one of those like smash hits that like everybody wanted to like liked or whatever, and it inspired a lot of people. But I think Akira's, and we can talk about this later, but could we have it on our docket of like topics mm-hmm. to cover with it? But I think the legacy of Akira didn't really make, I mean, in Japan, it was amazing. But I think its legacy here kind of started to make a wave much later, after it was already like in theaters and stuff like that. Just because of the influences and the people that have kind of taken from that story or whatever, or this the aesthetic of the story. And speaking of aesthetic, like that's kind of the first thing I want to talk about with Akira. And it's just the man, like it's so the animation and the aesthetic is so cool to me. Like the idea of Neo Tokyo and like the bright lights and like the flashing and like how it's like how somebody in the 80s thought that 2019 would look like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's cool to like have that kind of idea where it's like futuristic, but also kind of like still currently modern, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it was. I thought it was cool.
It's super interesting. It is kind of one of the earlier cyberpunk aesthetics. Not the first. I wouldn't know what the first cyberpunk piece of media is, but it's one of the earlier ones. And what's really interesting, because I've seen Akira before, but I saw it again yesterday. And earlier this week, I saw a video called The Insane Exaggerated Cities of 90s Cinema by Patrick H. Willems. It's a great, great video essay for anyone who's interested in like cinema history and shit like that. And it's this version of Neo Tokyo is kind of what was big in the late 80s, all throughout the 90s, of this huge sprawling city where you basically can barely ever see the sky because so many skyscrapers are together, and the futuristic highways where there's elevated highways connecting different parts of the cities. Again, very, very interesting. And it's, like I said, one of the first examples of that.
Yeah. And it's, I was looking it up too, because I had like a point to make about just the aesthetic and the animation style, because they use, was one of the last, if my memory is correct, and this research didn't really give me that much, what I was trying to ask, but is, I think Akira is one of the last few anime to be cel shaded in terms of its animation style and how it was drawn.
Yes. Yes. I don't know much about that, but I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. So basically, like, what they, like, mean, for those that don't know what cel shading is, like, they basically take the, like, you draw on transparent sheets and you kind of just like layer them on top of each other, and you add like light to the bottom. And then basically, like, I think that's how that works. And so, you can get different kind of effects, and you can get different kinds of like manual, like shading, lighting effects and stuff like that, just by doing that kind of cel shading. I think Akira is one of the last few anime to do that. I think it was like a cool, like, nod to it. But I think, as far as aesthetic goes too, what I like is that they, like I said, with like the, how an 80s person views 2019, like the fact that CDs are still in the future, it was funny as shit to me.
Yeah.
You know, like they had like, they pressed a little, like a little jukebox and the CD came out. I'm like, bro, if it's 31 years as a gap between the 80s and whatever, like 2019 or 2020, like CDs, you know what I'm saying? Like CDs are obsolete, essentially. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
They didn't know.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. So I think that's funny, like how stuff from that time period when it was made still stayed into like how people viewed the future, if that made sense.
Yeah. And the aesthetic of this movie is so iconic because there are so many pieces of like the Akira bike, like Kaneda's bike, I remember is in Ready Player One. Spielberg's movie. And for those of you gamers out there, if you guys saw the Game Awards, when they announced Naughty Dog's new game, Intergalactic, it said it was inspired by Cowboy Bebop, Akira, and other cyberpunk anime.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, the main character puts on a jacket, and it's like a kind of shortcut red jacket, just like Kaneda's.
Yeah.
And she's got the high top Adidas, and she looks basically, she looks just like Kaneda.
Yeah. And she has that whole aesthetic, and she had like the Walkman, like record player,
and they have the same CD jukebox thing.
Yeah, where like it picks up the CD and turns. Yeah, exactly. I think that's like a cool like nod to Akira and stuff like that. I think it's very heavy handed in its influence.
Yes,
or its homage. But for anime fans, that's kind of like, you know, I probably will end up playing the game just off of the strength of that alone, to be honest with you. Speaking of Akira's bike or Kaneda's bike, here's my the funniest thing about Akira and the legacy it carried with them. It's with it is the bike slide.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of, if not the most iconic, like single shot in fiction. One of, I'll say that.
Yeah.
And it is so funny to me that happens in the first scene, the opening scene of Akira. It's literally like the explosion happens. You see these people flying around on their bikes. You kind of start to meet the character. You start to meet Kaneda. You start to meet Tetsuo. And then he does the slide. It happens for 2 seconds. Two seconds. Mm-hmm. And it never happens again. And there is not a single other shot that has been replicated more than that 2 second clip. I think it's so funny to me.
It's so cool. It's so cool. It's just the posing and the point of view that it happens from.
Yeah.
It's such a cool thing. And again, this movie is very influential. So a lot of animators like to just do it with their own characters.
Yeah.
Like I've seen obviously the Ninja Turtles, but then, like, I've seen Finn and Jake do it, where Finn's riding Jake like a horse.
Yeah.
Like,
Marceline does it, too, I think. I can't remember.
Marceline does it, like, herself. Like,
yeah,
she's on all fours. And it's so iconic. And this is where I start to get hype. Because Jordan fucking Peele did it live action in his best movie. And I almost exploded on Nope towards the end of the movie. In the climax, Kiki Palmer's character is on a bike. And then it just cuts when they enter the cowboy town, Jupiter's Claim. It cuts and she slides under the camera and with her foot on the ground. I don't know how they set that up. Obviously, I don't think she was riding and actually slid. I think it was like a rig. Mm-hmm. But it was so cool. It was so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is cool. Don't get me wrong, it is cool. I think it's funny that it is like the scene does not happen long enough.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Or that bike slide, or like the setup for the bike slide doesn't, to me, I guess after seeing it so many times in different parts of fiction and then going back to the original one, it didn't have the weight I thought it would have, if that makes sense.
Like, sure, it's not really an important plot point part of the movie.
No, it's not.
They're fighting a gang that they see one more time after.
And Kaneda just like, it's literally like Kaneda, I think what happens is, oh yeah, the guy flies past them. Kaneda has to turn around and he just, whoop, and then goes. And I was like, that's it. And I was like, I paused it and I go, huh.
But
don't get me wrong, it is an iconic scene. I think it's like because it shows how important Akira is in fiction. I understand that part. I thought it was funny.
What's really funny to me is like the animators were probably like, oh, this would be cool. Like they didn't really think too much of it, but they were like, yeah, this looks cool.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, like, okay, so I guess as far as the story of Akira goes, like what, like any kind of like thoughts on just like the overall like beginning to end of Akira, like what did you think about it?
I really like how mysterious it is, and like it's not too much telling us what's going on. It's showing us, and like there are points in the movies where I have questions, and then like the questions are kind of answered towards the end, like the climax, which is, I just think is great storytelling. There's just some parts, and these are nitpicky, right? Because if I have to nitpick, that means there are no big issues.
Right.
But like my biggest nitpick is like, did Tetsuo always have those, or did he get the powers when he was hospitalized?
Yeah.
I don't think they really explain that part. They unless don't, I missed it.
They don't, but I think Kay's situation kind of maybe answers Tetsuo's situation.
Yes, because she starts getting powers because she was possessed by them.
So I think what the thing is, I think they found that Tetsuo just might have the propensity to have psychic abilities.
Mm.
And then when they, and he just so happened to run into whatever that dude's name is, Takashi. He just so happened to run into Takashi and they found him. And so like Kay is also somebody that they never found, but is also in tune psychically, I guess. I don't know. That's not really a word, but like in tune with the psychic, like, kind of power and stuff. So that's why what's her name's able to kind of like project herself into Kay's body and speak through her. And then also like towards when they do that little, when they have that fucking Evangelion moment at the very end where Kanada's like going through everybody's memories.
Yeah.
It shows the three like alien looking
people
as kids, and like they were tested on because they had psychic abilities. So yes. I think that kind of answers the question about Tetsuo. I think.
Maybe.
Although they all explicitly say, that's one thing I have a gripe with a little bit with Akira, is they don't explicitly say certain things that I was like, that I kind of needed a little more context on in order for me to fully get the story. But again, you know, they do more showing than telling you, which I think is fine. But that's just like, you know, it's like a tiny little nitpick. What I will say, my little tiny nitpick is the world building. I wish they would have went into a little bit more from the perspective of why everyone was protesting and giving all these terrorist attacks on the city of Neo Tokyo. Or Tokyo in general. You see what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
They kind of allude to it a little bit with like the tax something being like a big blunder when the government or whatever. Mm-hmm. They kind of explain why Tokyo is in that situation with that explosion for World War III. They just kind of mention it once and then they don't say it again. And for a good chunk of like the first half, in the first like quarter of the movie, the good chunk of it is like Kanada and his crew are accused of being terrorists.
Yeah.
And they don't explain why there are so many terrorists, just like suicide bombing and just protesting and rioting. They don't really explain why those people are doing all those things. And I think it would have added more to like the world building if they had like said that. And then also what the psychic abilities have to do with the government's reaction to the protests and terrorists and stuff. See what I'm saying? They didn't really like explain that part.
I think at one point there probably was more to that, but someone told them to tone it down, because there's one part when the colonel kind of stages a coup and is like, hey, all of you are following me, we need to go kill Tetsuo.
Yeah.
He tells him like, can't you see you're all capitalist pawns and this and that and blah, blah. I feel like there probably was a big anti-capitalist message.
Yeah.
And someone in the studio was maybe like, maybe we tone this down.
Yeah, maybe we don't go here.
Yeah.
I can see that sentiment. Yeah, for sure.
Because the director, which I also find very interesting, the director of the movie is the original mangaka.
Yeah.
And the manga's very different.
Yeah, it is. I think what he did, if my memory's correct, I could be wrong. I might have to look at it. I might have to be Jamie for a second. But if my memory is correct, I think he basically took like the beginning of Akira, the middle of Akira, and the end of it, and just like moved them all together. Mm. If that makes sense. I think. Like, if you want to talk about something else as far as your favorite characters, though, please be my guest. I'm going to be Jamie for a second.
Are my favorite characters in the movie?
Like, yeah, the movie or just like
I really like, yeah. I really like Kaneda. I think he's a good. I think he's real. It's funny because like there are so many different characters who know what they're talking about. Like, Kay is part of this rebel faction, and the colonel is obviously a colonel who has all this intel about the scientific projects. And then Kaneda's there because Tetsuo's his friend.
Right.
And he doesn't give a shit about literally, and he does not even care about protesting. He's just there because Tetsuo is in trouble.
Right.
And then, you know, there are some parts where he's trying to flirt with Kay. He's kind of funny. When they're in the sewer and the colonel's like, everyone hug the wall. And he's like, huh? What the? I don't know. I really like Kaneda.
Yeah. Okay. So I do also like Kaneda. He's very, very funny. I think he's just, it's interesting. Before I get into like the differences between the anime and manga, it's interesting that they don't really establish who the main character is in the story at all. Like, you kind of think it's Tetsuo, and then when Tetsuo becomes like a villain, like Yagil is kind of the main character now, I guess, and then it kind of follows the story.
It's more like Neo Tokyo's the main character.
I was gonna say see, me and you are just, you know, that's what a decade of friendship does for you.
Yeah,
you know? Literally. I thought about that too. I was like, I think Neo Tokyo in general is the main character, and that's why the nitpick about the protesting and terrorist attacks kind of like annoys me, because that's a huge part of it that they don't like get into. And they have one meeting with an entire government council that ends in an argument, and I was like, I wish they would have brought more people or like had more scenes with that group instead of just that one, because then it would have tied like the government's actions to the protesters and terrorist attacks, and that would have tied into the actual like psychic, like the reason why you're breeding testing on psychic children and like raising them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I was hoping for like the full circle situation, but yeah, it is what it is. It's still a great movie though. All right, so, I mean, one of them, I guess when I was looking at, like, differences between the anime and the movie, the movie and the manga, it says, while the anime puts a lot of effort into humanizing Tetsuo, making it understandable how a troubled young boy could decide to use new psychic powers to elevate his status, in the manga, there's not much in the way of making excuses for Tetsuo's actions. He learns of his new abilities and almost immediately begins to hurt people. And I was like... I was like, dang, I do think that it is kind of interesting because they take Tetsuo and like you could see the groundwork for trying to make him this troubled boy that always needs to be helped, like turning heel when he gets powers.
Yeah.
But they don't fully commit to the bit. You know what I'm saying? Because like it happens too quickly.
Sure.
Like he doesn't get bullied or beat up early.
He just gets saved.
Like if what happened with him and Kaori happened earlier before he got his powers, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like him getting attacked by the rival gang and then like Kaori almost getting, I'm not going to say that on air. And then like Tetsuo getting beat up or having Kaneda step in and save him again. And then he gets the powers. That would have been like, okay, I see where they're going with that.
Side note, he's the only one that gets hospitalized in the beginning. Yeah,
true.
So I could kind of see like he's like, damn, I'm the only one that got fucked up here.
True. That makes sense. I do think the scene where I can't not think about that meme where Tetsuo's up against like the yellow wall and it's like, Akira, leave me alone. the internet has ruined that scene for me because it
really stood out to me because the dub on Crunchyroll is a different dub.
I had to watch it in sub. I couldn't watch the dub. It was so cringy to me. I couldn't do it.
No, I think the dub was fine. Johnny Young Bosch is Kaneda.
Is he really? I didn't even try. I watched. What's funny, I switched it over.
There are some characters who are, like, the three Esper kids are pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, I twitched it over one time and I was like, ooh. I know Kayla is going to be laughing right so hard right now with us debating on dub and sub, but whatever.
I was watching it at work. I had to fucking.
That's fair. I think the drugs in the like the Capsule Corp drugs thing play a more significant role in the manga. Also, I saw something where the Akira, the story, is just the first two volumes of the manga. And I think it just has like an anime only original ending, I think, or I it think takes so. The ending of the story and just tacks it onto the first two volumes of Akira.
I think that would make sense.
Yeah. So basically, like K, much like Tetsuo, developed psychic powers through the events of the manga, and so they kind of just give her powers in the anime.
Yeah.
Essentially. That's interesting. And then, like, I guess the biggest change is the fact that, like, Akira's not even in the story.
Yeah, it's just more... I mean, in the movie, you do see him. He does get revived. And then he nukes Tokyo again, because he was the nuke that destroyed Tokyo the first time.
Yeah. So what they say is like
it's a lot of environmental storytelling, because apparently it's the reason World War III started is because Akira nuked Tokyo.
Yes. Yes, and they kind of go back into that. Yeah, yeah. So what it says here is like in the anime, viewers may have noticed a very distinct lack of Akira. And I get like they mention him so much, and it's kind of like I'm trying to think if there's like a like another like fictional equivalent to like, it's kind of like, this is not a one-to-one comparison. It's the only one I can think of right now is Voldemort in Harry Potter. How for a good chunk of the story, Voldemort is just like he who must not be named. They just kind of mention him. Actually, you know what? I got a better example. This is just like, Madara in Naruto.
Okay.
Madara's name is mentioned countless times and in the anime, I think, countless times and like brought through in terms of like the Uchiha stuff. And like he's mentioned so many times, and he's kind of this ethereal being that could pop up at any time. And he's just like the super scary person. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of shows up and he does his thing. And he's like a big character for the rest of Naruto. But for the most part, like they kind of just talk about him and that's it, right? When it comes to Akira, same thing. Like they mentioned Akira as this, some sort of like ethereal being that is gonna save everybody, is gonna do this whole like get Tokyo back to where it was, and it gives like the protesters and all the like the regular citizens like hope and belief that things are gonna turn around. And like the government's like, oh, we got to prevent Akira from coming back and stuff like that. And then coming to find out, it's just like they took Akira and like broke him down by components of his body. So by the time Tetsuo gets to him, he's just like a capsule of just whatever.
Like his nerve endings, his brain, like.
Right. So what it says, other than his name being mentioned a few times and his disembodied organs seen in the sealed container, Akira was nowhere to be found. In the manga, while Akira doesn't talk much, he plays a bigger role. It says, after Tetsuo frees him from deep inside the government facility, designed to keep Akira in a deep stasis, he awakens, sending a blinding light, another destructive blinding white light throughout Neo Tokyo. From the rubble, Tetsuo, in an apprentice-like position, begins amassing power in people on behalf of Lord Akira. So, like, What I think happens is the first two volumes happen, actually. And then once Akira is Akira is actually supposed to be resurrected, and then it's the rest of the story trying for like the government or Kaneda or whoever trying to stop Akira and Tetsuo together.
I mean, I guess I want to read the manga, but I kind of like the idea of like, oh, Akira's being held underground just for Tetsuo to open it, and it's just Akira's body parts.
Yeah, I like that part too.
I like it because it kind of shows the government and how like slimy and or how sneaky they are, and that this hope that some of the people of Neo Tokyo are waiting for will never come because he's dead and he's all his body parts are separated.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I mean, like, obviously it does make me want to maybe go back and read the manga just to kind of see. But I do think they do kind of wrap the story up in that, in like a, not a nice bow per se, but
a bow.
Nice enough. Yeah, a bow. Nice enough to where it kind of gives it like, you get the closure from it. Like, so your favorite characters survive. And they kind of just go, and like, it's like a happily ever after. They kind of just go out through life and kind of figure things out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does, like, I do think that there was more story to be told, and you could definitely tell watching that movie. But yeah, I think it ended perfectly fine. Is there anything else? Oh, I kind of want to go back to the legacy thing because, as far as it, holding up with, as far as like just the movie itself, how it holds up with the anime that are out there today, like what do you think it still like holds up in like a top tier scale, or you think it's in a different kind of ballpark?
No, I think it still holds up solely because no matter how many things it's influenced, especially in anime, mainstream anime has been and will continue to be kind of a formula. Even if, and I'm not saying like, oh, all mainstream anime is bad. No, because I fucking love JJK and I fucking love Demon Slayer. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the formula is wrong. I'm just saying that a lot of mainstream anime are going to try to be following whatever's hot, whatever's the big ticket item.
Yeah.
And I feel like even though Akira was and still is a big ticket name, big ticket item, it's very personal in a sense. It's kind of just like this. It's in its own league. It's like, it's political, it's dark, it's adult. Like I feel like one of the selling points of it was like, even though it's brutal, that scene where Tetsuo and Kaori get assaulted, where they rip Kaori's shirt off, it's like, whoa, what the hell? The scene where the guy that's escaping with Takashi, the way that guy gets gunned down.
Oh yeah. He gets
brutal.
He gets destroyed. Yeah.
He's eviscerated. The body horror elements of this anime.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a lot of that in anime. I see a lot of that in body horror in general, specifically when Tetsuo's hallucinating and he thinks his guts fall out.
Yeah.
That is almost like one, and if I'm wrong, strike me down with a flying ice cream truck and live. that is like almost one for one. I don't know if you've seen The Substance.
I have not, no.
Well, The Substance is a body horror film about women's what's the word I'm looking for?
Is it reproduction system or something?
No, it's the idea that society wants women to look younger. Beauty standards.
Oh, beauty standards. I was like,
it's about women's beauty standards. And okay. then the younger version goes over her time for like an hour. And she has a hallucination where she's having sex with this guy and he's unzipping her bodysuit and all her guts fall out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's a hallucination of guts falling out. That's yeah. Akira.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was one of that scene where he's I mean, the meme is part of that scene, too. I think it's
yes, it is.
Leave me alone. Yeah, but yeah, that part was cool. I thought for a quick second, and that's how good the scene was. I thought for a quick second, I was like, did Tetsuo really just fucking, like, all his guts just fell out and he's just about to die or like die? And then it snaps back to where he's just on the ground. I was like, okay, well, I think that was a really cool scene. Yeah, you don't really see that too much. The only show in the modern time right now I could think of, and again, if I'm wrong, strike me down with a flying ice cream truck
and live.
Castlevania is the only one I remember out of recent memory that does yeah, that. It does.
It's gory.
Gory deaths. Like, I remember when, like, the first couple episodes where Dracula, like, comes down and murders an entire village. Like, those people die gruesomely.
Yeah.
And, Devilman Crybaby is the other one I'm thinking of too.
I was gonna bring up Devilman Crybaby, but that one is so well until the end.
I mean, it came out roughly around the same time. The original.
But I just remembered the end where they have homeboy's girl's head like on a pike.
Yeah,
I just remembered that part. But again, that's more just visceral gore instead of body horror.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Especially Devilman Crybaby.
Remember the club scene?
The opening scene? Yeah.
Dog, you're going to sit here and tell me I saw body horror where buddies.
It's been a while.
A homegirl's vagina grows like 37 teeth?
Yeah.
Like, are we for real?
I was going to bring up the climax of Akira where that. What's almost more creepier than him turning into like the giant baby, like being reborn and stuff like that, is he gets his arm blown off. So then he just makes himself a new robotic arm.
Yeah.
And then when he can't control it anymore because he doesn't have capsules and he sits down on the Olympic throne and the wires start embedding themselves into the stone of the throne. Yeah. Like that gives me the creeps. It's so weird because they're electric wires, but they're now part of his biology, his anatomy.
Yeah.
Because they're control. Like it's so cool.
Yeah. And then to add to that, when he becomes that grotesque form and then starts to like reach out and grab people, and he grabs Kaori. Kaori's death was like genuinely made me feel sick. Like it was because it was like a body horror thing where like you could see his body continue to like his cells multiply at a rapid rate to the much so much so that it literally just like crushes her. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like that's insane.
There's there's a shot when he's starting to grow that I'd never noticed before that I had to rewind. They show his nuts.
They do.
They show his balls. That. I was like,
I forgot about that. I was like, wait, I think I didn't go back because I was just like, I didn't want to think about it, but I saw it happen. And I like a couple seconds later, I go,
I double take like, did I just see what I think I just saw?
Yeah, it's nuts, right? It's insane.
It's crazy.
That's another really cool part. You don't really see too many anime do that now. I mean, Chainsaw Man is another one I'm thinking of, kind of. But they're not really... Is that body horror?
I mean, or is that something else? I guess the chainsaws coming out of Denji's face could be considered body horror.
Yeah.
But not to the same effect of like the sanctity of the human body has been defiled.
Fair enough. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. yeah, the only thing I can really think of, I guess, in that regard would be Devilman Crybaby. It's the only thing I can really think of.
Again, going back to the sub, do you care? Are you going to watch this movie?
Substance? No.
Yeah. Okay. Even if I'm about to spoil it right now, I think you should probably still watch it. It's probably one of the more creative movies that came out this year. Yeah. As someone who has seen 111 movies this year, 92 of them being new.
Yeah.
At the end of The Substance, the way the rules work is you got an old body and then you transfer the blood and some other kind of liquid into the new body and you're that young person for 1 week. You can't go over.
Okay.
The younger version started going over so much so that the older body got shriveled up like almost exaggeratively old. Like it's gross.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where the younger body couldn't get any more liquid or blood from the older body. So she says she started falling apart and she said, oh, I'll just use the substance on myself as someone who's already used the substance.
Yeah.
So then in a very cool sequence, out of her back gets birthed this weird just mass of a monster just like Akira. Maybe not huge, but it's this big glob of body parts that shouldn't be in the places that they're at. Like really ugly faces. And like, again, if that wasn't inspired by Akira, then I must be just connecting these two things because I just saw that. But no, I would like, it has to be at least a little bit inspired by Akira.
Yeah, because while the bike slide is the shot from Akira, I also think that Tetsuo turning into two scenes other than that. It's the bike slide, but then there's also Tetsuo like in the hospital where he's like powering up and like the walls are like caving. That's another like iconic shot. And then I think that was used in one of Kanye West's music videos. I could be wrong about that.
Yes.
Like that scene specifically.
Because this movie is Kanye has said it is his favorite movie.
Yeah. And then the other one is like the sequence of Tetsuo turning into that big glob monster.
Yeah.
So yeah, if that part of Substance isn't even like somewhat like they saw it and was like, oh, I want to do that. Like that'd be an insane like thought process, but like you could be putting two together, but like, I think that's a pretty fair comparison to say that that's probably from Akira. Yeah. But yeah, I think for me, as far as going back to like whether or not Akira holds up in the more modern sphere of anime, I think it does. But I will say that, but I'll say it holds up because of the fact that it kind of inspired so many things. And you are right about the more formulaic types of like ways anime go about presenting themselves now, and say with manga too, but at the same time, it's a situation where it's going to be very hard to get a completely new original thought when it comes to like anime. Because whatever somebody did, somebody's already done before, and then they just taken what that is and just kind of changing the font a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like even something like Sakamoto Days, which is going to get an anime adaptation pretty soon. We're super excited for that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
There's still, it's still kind of a formulaic story without it, with like, it's just kind of taking some of the other things in shonen. I'm blanking on what exactly it's taking, what story it's taking from, but it's taking that. Oh, kind of like the, yeah, I know what it's taking from. It's kind of taking from like the One Punch Man formula, where this unassuming person is actually really fucking strong. Mm-hmm. Like it's taking, it's like this, the Saitama is like this bald, unassuming guy, but his punches are super powerful. He's literally the most powerful person in the world. Sakamoto is this fat dad that runs a convenience store that just so happens to be the strongest assassin known to man. So yeah, like you can look at Sakamoto and be like, oh, nobody's doing this, but you could just look at One Punch Man and be like, okay, you're right. It's just One Punch Man in a slightly different font, you know?
Which again, we're not saying that that's bad.
Right. No, I'm not saying it's bad at all.
It's just, that's what I mean by Akira is more personal. It's for lack of a better word, it's like, it's its own thing. This guy kind of had a story, a message. He had something to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a lot of times, yeah, it's just, that's, yeah, never, when I say that, this, my previous, like, statement, that's never to be like, oh, this is a bad thing. Never been my intention.
Yeah, and, like, just to explain more about, because obviously not all anime is formulaic, right?
Right.
Because there are outliers, like, I always bring it up, it's one of my favorite anime, Sunny Boy. Sunny Boy, to me, feels very personal. It doesn't feel like anything else. Maybe the same vibe as like Ava, maybe, but the story is not at all anything like Ava.
Yeah, like maybe like an overarching theme, but sure. In terms of the story, no.
And that's why to me it just feels more personal. But again, I'm still watching JJK. I'm still watching, I'm gonna watch Sakamoto Days. I fucking love Dandaran. Like, just because it's quote unquote formulaic doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah. And I think I lost my train of thought. Oh, like with JJK and other titles, you know what I'm saying? It's just, I'd still say that Akira, I wouldn't say Akira's like, in terms of animation style and voice acting and action. Like, I'm not putting Akira up on mm-hmm. on that stage. It's just not a smart thing to do, and it's just like not you know what I'm saying, like I'm not even gonna put it in that lens, but I will say that in terms of just the overarching world building aesthetic and just its approach to the story it's trying to tell, mm-hmm. I think it holds up with a lot of up against a lot of shows now.
Correct. I agree.
And so, you know, it's just, that's just kind of how I kind of view it. And I don't think it's anything bad that things are going to be formulaic. Like, every time a new story comes out that's similar to Naruto or similar to Bleach, I'm going to read it. I'm going to watch it. It just is what it is. Like, Kagurabachi is just like, Kagurabachi is similar to Bleach in terms of main character and swordplay. And then you get like, a little bit of like a little bit of originality with the fact that there's these magical enchanted swords that the main character is trying to track down because they're essentially just allegories for weapons of mass destruction. That's, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, that's just, I love the originality part of it in that regard. But at the same time, it's just if you made Ichigo brooding with black hair and gave him a revenge story. That's all you did.
Sure.
You know, because that's the kind of stuff that's going to make it to Shonen Jump anyways.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, that's my whole thing. Do you have any other words on Akira? I know we're sitting at the hour mark, a little bit shorter of an episode than me and you usually do.
I just find it funny. I find it interesting how much this has inspired. Because Hideo Kojima says, It's a big inspiration for Metal Gear Solid. Like the political aspects, I would say.
Yeah.
The environment, the setting was a very big inspiration for the Final Fantasy VII team when designing Midgar.
That makes sense.
The Wachowski sisters say it was a big inspiration for The Matrix.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Fucking Christopher Nolan. Christopher Nolan, I don't know how, says it was a big inspiration for The Dark Knight.
I maybe like the cityscape and like how...
The bike,
maybe? like Batman's bike is hard, by the way. Batman's bike is hard in that movie.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know.
He also says it was a big inspiration for Inception, which I know for sure. Also, Satoshi Kon's Paprika.
Inception and Paprika are like essentially just...
So I think like he was sisters. I think he was just watching a lot of anime at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
What else? The Star Wars prequels with the big cities and Battle Angel Alita, Cowboy Bebop, Chronicle, that found footage movie, Chronicle.
Oh yeah,
because the nerdy kid
Tetsuo turns story. Evil. Yeah,
it's that
yeah,
he's Tetsuo.
Yeah, yeah. He is Tetsuo. Yeah, that makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, a little bit shorter of an episode than we usually do. You know,
I have one thing to maybe update you on, and also some other people.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with Akira. I think do you have anything else to say about Akira?
No, I think we said everything we needed to say.
Okay, so. Quick update in the world of comic books.
Oh.
In the year of our Lord 2025,
okay.
DC is releasing a Harley Quinn story.
Okay.
Which, depending on who you are, it could be exciting. It could be a little annoying because they've been banking on Harley Quinn for a long time now. And they've been kind of changing up her character. They're kind of just treating her like DC's Deadpool.
Okay.
But this story is all about her farting.
Wait. Run that back.
DC. Hold on. Harley.
Wait, I think you haven't, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't have the context, but I think I know what you're talking about. Again, I think this is just me and you sharing the same timeline on Twitter. Uh-huh. Is it that dumbass Scratch and Sniff?
Yes.
Comic book? Okay. Correct. Yeah.
It's called Harley Quinn Fartacular, Silent But Deadly.
Oh my God.
Now. This is the official synopsis from DC. I've been holding in all of my very worst bits of bubble guts for the last 32 years, and it's been leading up to this epic expulsion. Your nose will never be the same again. You'll gag, you'll cry, you'll feel things you've never felt before. This fine publication is a celebration of all things past, present, and tooture, like future.
Oh my God.
I'm not gonna read the rest of that. It's it's got Scratch and Sniff stuff. The cover is, I don't know if you've seen it, it's her in the middle of a circus ring and she's blowing out a big green fart cloud.
Jesus. Oh yes, I have.
And I don't know. I think there is a divide because I saw a tweet from someone that said, leave it up to comic book fans to get angry at a fart comic because they can't get over the fact that women fart. So,
okay.
And then a quote tweet that said, "You're way too innocent to understand that this is a fetish comic."
Okay. Drastic sides of a spectrum, but okay.
But I lean more to the quote.
Fair. That's fair.
Because of the way that the farts are drawn. I don't know if you remember. Do you remember the Total Drama kindergarten fiasco?
Kind of.
So the Total Drama Island, you know, they do a bunch of stuff. There was one of them in kindergarten, and there's a fart fairy.
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah,
the kids would fart, leave green clouds, and the little fairy would sniff them up.
Yes.
And people, old people on the internet were like, this is the writer's barely disguised fetish.
Yeah.
So the art looks just like that. It's Harley Quinn, who,
my God.
Before even being played by Margot Robbie, people thought was hot, is now farting big green fart clouds. That sounds, one, gross. Two, fetishy.
Yeah, it does. That's so good. Oh my God, bro. My follow-up question was going to be, if Deadpool did something like this, would people fuck with it? And then now that you've kind of explained that part of context, I feel like I can't even go into that question anymore.
Here's the thing. Fart jokes are funny. If it's like if it's a joke. Yes. Not if it's a whole comic. And what makes it worse is, I feel personally, if Deadpool came out with a fart comic, I think that'd also be stupid.
Okay.
Because the biggest thing is, you would be cutting down the emotional weight that a Deadpool comic could bring.
Yes, because of like his jokes are mass for how sad he actually is. Yes, 100%.
And it's the same thing with Harley Quinn. Them turning Harley Quinn into Deadpool has really taken away the emotional weight that Harley Quinn brings. She isn't, and I'm not saying that every comic has to be about her and her abusive relationship with the Joker.
Yeah.
But Harley Quinn has a PhD, and now you're telling me she's going around farting on people?
That's a crazy sentence to say out loud.
Like, what are we doing here?
Fair. Yeah, it's fair.
That's like, fair. Like, yes, she's funny and she's goofy, but she's smarter and she's better than this.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't know what I wonder what that like meeting room was like when they were making this comic.
If I wonder anything, what they were talking about. I hope that they were like, maybe we'll do something funny for the younger kids. And that not they didn't think that this was gonna go over well with regular comic fans.
Yeah, I mean, because when you started it and you're like, oh well, they're doing this like weird thing and comic fans are getting mad, more often than not, you know, I feel like some, not all, comic book fans tend to kind of over exaggerate in their anger with certain things.
I agree.
And take things to varied extremes on certain subjects of things.
Sure.
I do agree that after seeing that panel too, I think I remember the panel I saw on Twitter. It does kind of get into more of a fetishy type of freaky vibe, which I'm not really. I think I just need to know who was in that room approving that, but whatever. But yeah, I think this is probably one of the few times I could say, like, okay, well, comic book fans are kind of justified in their anger of it because they're kind of like misrepresenting an entire character. One that you've built up and has been like a flagship character. Can I call her a flagship character?
Yes, she's definitely, yeah, like, at least they're trying to make her one, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you can't, I mean, obviously, like, the Joker and Batman are flagship characters, like, that situation. I think that, you can, I mean, people, when people have the, people think of the Joker, there's a good population of people that are fans of the Joker that will also bring up Harley Quinn. So I feel like you could definitely count her as a flagship character, and to treat her like this doesn't make sense. If it was just some one-off character that was like funny, that was a mostly comic relief kind of superhero character that came out with something like this, that would make sense.
It'd be different. Yeah. It's just I'm not opposed to Harley Quinn being a flagship character for DC either. They have been relying on her a lot, but I don't mind it because she'd be cool for girls to have as a big name. Like, it's not just Wonder Woman, because besides Wonder Woman, who else do you think of when it comes to like big DC names? I could say Black Canary, but most people don't know who Black Canary is.
Not really.
And you say Hawk Girl.
Supergirl maybe? Hawk Girl?
Which
Catwoman maybe?
Exactly. Catwoman, but like maybe? Supergirl and Hawk Girl are derivatives of Superman and Hawkman. So it's like,
yeah,
Harley Quinn, it's this original character created in the 90s for the cartoon. And she has a lot of emotional weight to her, and she's very smart, and she has a very cool backstory. If they just give her stories that respect her, then everyone would be fine. There would still be dumbass fucking comic book fans where it's like, Harley Quinn. No, it's just the whole fart angle. It's just weird.
Yeah. I mean, and like, to your point, people, they need more of a better woman presence for some of their character lineups for DC Comics, because even then with some of them, and I'll bring up Catwoman as an example, like, she's really just like a companion for Batman so they can have sexual chemistry on screen the entire time.
Yeah.
Even though there is a lot more to her character and they have explored that before, more often than not, she's just there so her and Batman can look at each other super lustily.
And then they can make jokes like, if you're bad, I'll see you tonight. And then Batman's like, then I'll be bad, or something like that. Like, yeah, they're always flirting with each other.
Yeah, and then depending on the writer, they actually have sex. You know? Yeah. And then, yeah, like, Hot Girl and Supergirl are just the female version of the two already established male characters.
Which I think it's a cool thing that Hawk Girl is more famous than Hawk Man. I don't know who came first, but it's cool that Hawk Girl is a little more famous. I just think Harley Quinn is a step in the right direction if they keep taking the right steps.
Yes. I'm trying to think, is there anybody else other than Wonder Woman? Like, I feel like we're missing somebody.
Like I said, Black Canary. Like, think of the Justice League cartoon.
Yeah, it's just Black Canary.
Zatanna. Yeah. But again, Zatanna's not flagship.
Zatanna's barely, she's not a flagship character, no. She's barely in a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
That's interesting. What I hope they do, though, is not make her just this, like, put her into that, I'm referring to Harley Quinn, not putting her into that Catwoman situation where she just kind of has, depending on the writer, she looks at Joker really lustily and they occasionally have sex. You know what I'm saying? I don't want it to be the case. I want her to actually have like a real, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, run where she's just kind of either her own character or she's part of a group. Like, even the Suicide Squad comics are fine. Like, she's in those and she's fine. If they're trying to make her, I mean, you can't really go wrong with making a character like that, the Deadpool equivalent. You just have to do it correctly.
Correct.
Like, the fourth wall breaks are fine. All that kind of stuff.
I'm not even saying that I dislike Deadpool either. When they're done right, they're done well.
Yeah. Like, you can, I mean, I think Harley Quinn breaking the fourth wall kind of makes sense to because of her character. I don't think they need to do it as heavy handed, if that's the direction they're trying to take. But yeah, I think they if they're going to treat her like that, I feel like they need to kind of not make it just childish jokes the whole time. All right. Well, It's been a long time since we've done this. Do you have any music recommendations?
Recommendations this week. What have I been listening to? Well, my phone just restarted. That was weird. this week I've been listening to a lot of Wallows. Nah, there's got to be something new, right? Wow, not too many new stuff I've been listening to. Wallows. The band with Dylan Minnette of 13 Reasons Why fame and other stuff that he's in. Their last album, Model, was pretty good. Their album from 2022, Tell Me That It's Over. I love that album. Just been listening to them a lot.
So for me, it's been a lot. I'm going in a lot of different directions. Obviously, SZA came out with her deluxe album for SOS. It's called Lana. Between You and Me should have been its own album.
But it should have been its own album.
Should have been its own album, but neither here nor there. Whatever. Obviously, the 30 for 30 song with Kendrick Lamar is fire. Samples one of my favorite songs of all time. The Negro Spiritual, Throw Some D's on It by Rich Boy. love that song. And then I guess I'll go. So I sent you this text with this guy. The artist name is Noah Guy. Noah Guy is his name. With the caption, this white boy good.
Yeah.
So I have started to gather white artists to make a playlist called That White Boy Good. And he is going to be part of that playlist. He is in the same realm of like, not really like a Jameson per se. He's like a little bit more like toned down in terms of like the dance elements. But he definitely has a more like soulful singing voice and has a soulful approach to his songs. And I just really enjoyed that kind of R&B that he provides. And he just, I don't know. I like all of his EPs so far. The most recent one he came out with, I think, what is it called? It Must Be Love. The song Jamila, hilarious name for a song and a woman he's singing about being a white dude, but it is what it is. Very funny. That song has been on repeat for a long time. So yeah, definitely check that guy out. You got any other final thoughts before we get out of here?
Hope everyone had a happy holidays. Hope you got a lot of cool stuff. I got a Smith & Wesson knife. For work specifically, I work at a park.
Yeah.
But it is nice. It's a nice little pocket knife.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I got, added to the collection, I got the entire Death Note story in one big ass volume, which is
looks sick.
Unbelievably hard to read. Oh, that's cool.
With this comic book cover in the back, that's pretty sick.
That's fire. Let's see, what else did I get? What else did I pick up?
I got some stuff I got to hang up for the podcast, but I'll show those off when I hang them up.
Yeah, kind of similar. Like I'm kind of getting the back end of my stuff now. Like behind me, this empty space is going to be filled up with posters at some point in time.
Wait, let me see if I can. God damn, D20. It's got 20 sides. Can you see that?
Oh, no. Yeah, I kind of see it. Yeah,
it's the Straw Hat Jolly Roger on a D&D dice.
That's fire. That's fire. Oh yeah, you told me who got that for you? What was his name?
Our friend Johnny.
Johnny got it for you. Yes. Yeah. Shout out to Johnny Shout out to you, bro.
Play D&D. He does listen to the show.
Yeah. Shout out to Johnny. Shout out to Johnny for real. Appreciate the support. Okay. So that's it, right? We're done.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. That's been everything. I've been Nostalgia, aka Taylor. Astro by Zoe. See you guys next time. Peace.
Thanks.